So good morning all. Again, that lovely chant we just did. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning. You know, of course, that's what every koan is about, in a way, to somehow to evoke in us the true meaning of Buddhism or Zen or the Tathagata. So this koan is no different. I have given a teisho once or twice on this one before, and the way I usually work with koans and teishos is I usually go to a book. I might have different books that I do one on this and one on this and one on this, and I open it up and whatever comes up is it. Sometimes I change that if I think that, oh, this is a little bit you know, this is maybe not right or whatever, but very rarely, usually I just, whatever happens, happens. So this is one of those that came up again. And so this is number case 47 from the Mumon Khan. We've heard a lot about Mumon during the last 6 days, so I won't go over that again. And it's Tosotsu, a master in the Sung Dynasty. And it's called Tosotsu Three Barriers. Not much is known about this master. He had apparently no successors, but he was a very learned master, and apparently he went to a monastery very young, so young age. So I'll read out the case. Tosotsu Three Barriers. Master Tosotsu Etsu set up three barriers and asked his students, "The purpose of making one's way through the grasses and asking a master about the subtle truth is only to realize one's self-nature. Now, you venerable monks, where is your self-nature at this very moment? When you have attained your self-nature, you can free yourself from life and death. How will you free yourself from life and death when the light of your eyes is falling to the ground? When you have freed yourself from life and death, you know where to go. After your four elements have decomposed, where will you go?" So that's the case. Then Mumon gave a commentary on this. "If you can say three turning words about these barriers, you will be the master wherever you may be, in close contact with the real essence in all situations. If you have not yet reached this stage, gulping down your food will fill you up quickly, while chewing well will make it more difficult to become hungry again." And then Mumon wrote a verse about this. "In one consciousness, we see the whole of eternity. Eternity is nothing other than right now. If you see through this one consciousness at this moment, you see through the one who is seeing right now." A very powerful koan. Master Tosotsu was a Rinzai in the Rinzai lineage, and the Rinzai tradition values this koan very, very highly. As a matter of fact, it is the absolute last koan that a student does, just before they do the goi, you know, or the five ranks of Tozen. That's significant in a way, because they see that as almost like the final examination, or as part of the final examination. In our tradition, it comes up right first in the miscellaneous koans, this particular one, because it's seen as when we have an experience of seeing our true nature, we should be able to penetrate that. We might not necessarily appreciate the different layers, or there may be different layers within the barriers that are presented here, but we should be able to grasp it. That's just a little bit of a a bit of a side on. So, of course, we're talking about three barriers. One, two, three, four, five, six. There's millions of barriers. But right here, three barriers. Every koan is a barrier. Most of you are working on one barrier, mu. And as you know, and as I kept on saying many times, we have 700 cases to go through, 700 barriers. But of course, there's really only one barrier. And what's that barrier? That barrier is me. It's the I. That's the one barrier. Once we have really penetrated the I, once we have let go of that barrier of the I, all the other barriers, they might still stick here and there because the I is a tricky little customer. But generally, all the barriers just collapse. It's because there are no barriers. So three questions here, three barriers. How do I realize my true self? Number one barrier. Number second barrier, how do I die? How do I die? Okay. Number three barrier, where do I go after I die? What happens? Where do I go after I die? Of course, these are really significant questions that have been asked in history and have been addressed in all major religions. And you can't help but somehow, or religion or spirituality somehow can't help avoiding those questions. Because they come up, they somehow drive us. They drive our condition and they come up and it needs to be addressed. And the degree to which they are addressed is really, you know, the degree to which we really find authenticity in any type of tradition. And for us to address them, there comes a point where we feel the need to address them. And certainly that first barrier, how to realize, is one that comes up, or it's one of the reasons why people come to Zen. One of the things that Zen does not do, or I shouldn't really say Buddhism in general, but generally in Zen, what we don't do is to address immediate concerns. Immediate concerns. Like my relationships, I should say, or my career, or my psychological needs or my health needs. You know, these are immediate problems that we all face. And they are, of course, very relevant. I mean, that's so immediate. They are so immediate. They're so very much relevant. But Zen does not address those. You know, and I would even argue in a way that Buddhism or that the Buddha does not address those specifically. So that is why when people come to Zen and there's a lot of sitting involved and there's a lot of meditation involved, there's all these strange koans, you know, people are very much occupied by their immediate concerns. And if those immediate concerns aren't addressed, well, then it's not for me. It's just not for me. Why should I even go there? How does that help me? So that is a typical way that the functioning mind operates. Makes total sense, you know. Most of you will have heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, and that points to that. You know, depending on our need, you know, and depending on how our needs are met, depending on our needs reflects very much what we are looking for in order to address those needs. So if I am if I am worried, as I always say, if I'm worried about food and shelter, I wouldn't go to a session. I've got other things to do. I've got to tend the garden or go and... If I'm worried about it, that means I haven't got sufficient funds to somehow... I live hand to mouth. You know, I need to make sure I get my food. That's my need. And if I don't have that need met, then there is no way I'm going to go to a session. You know? So that's sort of the basic need. Then it goes up, and he's developed this hierarchy, which is quite interesting. And I'm sure that there are many others or layers or whatever, and we don't necessarily have to agree with that. But he sort of then looked at the social aspect and said, if I don't have any relationships, or if my relationship or my social need is not met, then that becomes primary, not my essential nature. My essential nature is not primary at that moment. That need is my primary concern. You know. Then, and it goes on into different layers of primary needs. And as we, I don't want to look at it as a growth thing, but I guess you can look at it that way, because we go up and down with those needs all the time. We can be all of a sudden having no worries about money or no worries about basics like food, and then all of a sudden, snap, something happens, and whoa, we're straight down back needing to get a job because we've lost one, needing to get food on the table. You know, we can be unemployed just like that. You know? Or all of a sudden, we can be sick just like that. All needs change. We get sick. I mean, even the slightest pain, everything changes. It's all a matter of somehow what is our primary focus. So here, of course, the people that, in a way, that are driven towards finding the self nature are already going beyond that basic need. And that's quite a luxury, actually, to be able to do that. That's quite a luxury. So we are going beyond that need in the sense of trying to find out what underlies all the immediate needs. It's almost like a big picture. You know? And of course, that's what the Buddha did. You know, he had his needs, and he went out searching for the truth or whatever, or the way or whatever you want to call it, or out of suffering. In the end, it's all about suffering, or unsatisfaction, whichever way you want to look at it. And so he discovered, and this is also our, you know, this is also our purpose, what underlies all needs, what underlies all of these primary, you know, these primary concerns that we have. And this is why we're here. And so people that, you know, whose primary needs are not met, it's very difficult to come to a session, or to come and actually start that journey. Of course, and you keep in mind, as a monastic tradition, this is one of the reasons became home leavers, because then all of a sudden those needs, if you don't have family, and you all of a sudden leave your family, and all of a sudden you go begging, your food needs and your family needs are no longer a concern. In many ways, that whole renunciation life, that renunciant life, that monastic life, you know, already strips away those primary issues that we as secular people, as householders, still have to deal with. You know, in many ways, the monastics didn't have to deal with that, because there was, of course, an element of trust involved to do that, but they didn't have to deal with that. So in a way, there is still that burden as a society. Of course, being in the West, we are very lucky to have created a society where we have our absolute basic needs met. No one is going to go hungry in Australia. No one is not going to get any medical attention in Australia. You know, there might, of course, be different degrees, but the basic needs, in many ways, is already like what a monastery would provide. We already have that, you know, in certain countries like Australia already. So, coming back to this, the purpose of look at the first question, how to realize. The purpose of making one's way through grasses. Okay, so the purpose of making one's way through grasses. So the grasses are what you're dealing with on the cushion. The purpose of sitting, the purpose of making one's way through the grasses. And we're sitting there, moo, moo, that bloody moo, moo, moo. Christ, when is this going to be over? Moo, moo, moo. The purpose, okay, of going through the grasses, of the purpose of making one's way through the grasses, okay, and asking a master about the subtle truth. So, again, asking the master here, asking yourself, ask yourself that question, who is really the master, you know? Ask the purpose of asking the master. So you're asking that question. The fact that you are asking that question means you're asking it about to someone, even if that is yourself. There's already that. The purpose of making one's way through the grasping and asking a master about the subtle truth is to realize one's self nature. Then it goes on, now you venerable monks, where is your self nature at this very moment? So that's the question. Where is your self nature at this very moment? So what happens here is that we have a functioning mind. And that functioning mind is asking, where is it? Where is my true self? Or where is Mu? Okay. So that functioning mind is continuously operating. Okay. And within that functioning mind, we are now asked to step outside of that, to go beyond that function in order to realize it. It's like finding yourself. Or what do you mean, finding myself? I'm right here. What? You know, finding myself somehow, and we find it very difficult because we somehow, our functioning mind somehow looks at everything from a functional perspective. So if I go up through the grasses into the kitchen, there's a reason I go. Maybe it is to get the soup. So my functioning mind kicks in and says, I'm going to the kitchen to get the soup. Now it's very hard to see that there is no going, that there's no soup, and that no one that goes. It's really hard to see because the functioning mind kicks in all the time and it asks the question, why? How? Where? When? What's the purpose? And that drives our entire life, those questions. That those questions drive our entire life. Why? Because that's the function. That's the function of our mind. That's typical functioning mind. Without this, we couldn't function. So to go beyond that is to find our true self. That's what is meant, finding our, who are we beyond that functioning mind? Within the context of the functioning mind, because we cannot get rid of it. We cannot get rid of that function. It's like, that's just how it works. That's just how the functioning mind works. So when I go up in the kitchen, if I go up, how do I get to a point where I can let go of going up to the kitchen? That's really difficult, you know. And one of the words that comes to me, I read it by reading Chuang Tzu, that famous Chinese philosopher I've been telling you about, the Tao guy. He actually came up with that, well, he used that word, but it really resonated with me. And that is, I'm going up to the kitchen because it's unavoidable. really, it's unavoidable. I am speaking here because it's unavoidable. No matter what I do, it is unavoidable. Our functioning mind cannot cope with that because we are thinking in the dimension of time and space. Of course it's avoidable. Don't go. If I don't go to the kitchen, it's unavoidable. No matter what happens, no matter what we do, it's utterly unavoidable. That's the purpose. That's, if you like, unavoidable, you can see that as another name for our true nature. It's unavoidable. The news, let's not even go to the news. Whatever it is that I'm facing, no matter what, whatever arises, is truly unavoidable. Of course, I will add my two cents worth to it. That's also unavoidable. But in the end, there's that distinction between what the functioning mind does and what is perceived, in other words, the perception of it, which also, of course, is unavoidable, and actually what is happening. And if I can tap into that, if I can tap into that state of mind where I see unavoidable, then, of course, I'm free of my functioning mind. Then I see that the functioning mind is just nothing other than unavoidable. It just happens. There is nothing we can do about it. It just arises. Of course, the functioning mind comes up with a reason, causality, cause and effect. This happens and this happens and this happens and this happens. Or psychology, this happens and this happens and this happens. Or politics. We come up with all sorts of reasons. Ultimately unavoidable. So the purpose of making one's way through grasses and asking a master about the subtle truths is only to realize one's true nature. Now, you venerable monks, where is your self nature at this very moment? That's the question, and that's what we need to find out. Where is my self nature at this very moment? First barrier. Then he goes on. When you have attained your self-nature, so once you've attained it, once you see that, you can free yourself from life and death. So once you see unavoidable, there's no life, there's no death. You heard me talk about life and death many times, and I'm sure you would have read about it. We deal with life and death, and different religions deal with life and death in different ways. But of course, the functioning mind has created this persona, this, we call it whatever you want to call it, ego or Arno or identity, that functions in a way where it wants to survive. It's not even an it, you know. That's the function of it. It protects itself all the time. If Arno is cold, Arno puts on a jacket. You know, it created this, and I talked about that at length yesterday, so I don't want to go too much into it again, but it's created this identity called Arno, and it doesn't want to die. And so we've created, and it's not only does it want to die, it like the thought of even not existing is horrifying. It's horrifying, yeah. I don't know, some of you, I'm sure, would have encountered death. I've encountered it a few times, not only in my family. I remember once driving to Long Ridge on one of my trips in the early days, and I was with my brother-in-law actually from New Zealand, and we were driving along. All of a sudden, we came onto a road accident, and there's this lady on the road screaming, and it's just, you can imagine, just the heart sinks into your stomach when you come to a scene like that. So we were the first ones there, and there's this person, this man laying on the road, dead. And this lady did not know. She was obviously in shock, and all she was doing was screaming. And it was very early in the morning, and she hit a roo, and she kept on saying, "I've been told a million times, don't swerve when you see a roo, just keep driving, don't swerve when you read." That's what she kept on repeating over and over again. But of course, she reaction kicked in. She swerved, rolled the car, and her companion was, killed. And that shock of death, you know, that from all of a sudden, from 1 minute to the next, bang, gone like that, is very horrifying. And we feel for that. And our functioning mind in many way has not dealt with the concept, because we keep on protecting ourselves, the concept of this death, you know, or even old age for that matter. And of course, as we all know, that was one of the driving forces that drove the Buddha to discover, you know, what is this really all about? Is it just, and some people believe that, if I die, am I just gone? Is it just gone? Is this ego just gone? You know, that part we identify with, is that just gone? Or does it go somewhere? Yeah. And of course, out of that, many religions believe different, have created different concepts around this, including Buddhism. We find it very difficult to let go. So when we find our true self, meaning we discover who we are beyond Arno or beyond the identity or beyond Scott, then we find, you know, these are of course words, we find the real Scott or the real Shane or the real Sue. And you need to be able to answer that question. So the question is, when you have attained your self nature, you can free yourself from life and death, because you have freed yourself. You know, you have freed yourself from this small creation that the functioning mind is continuously reinforcing. Through our self-referencing, through our, should it be this way, should it be this way, through our going through the weeds on the cushion. We have free, when we have really seen that, we should be able to be free of it. So what is the body? Who am I? These are questions that will fall into place when we realize our true nature. So when you have attained your self-nature, you can free yourself from life and death. So the question in the Dokusan room is, how will you free yourself from life and death? You need to show that very specifically. How do you free yourself from life and death? When the light of your eyes is falling to the ground. In other words, when you're about to die. When the car is turning around as swerving happens, and bang, you're gone. That's the question that needs to be answered in the Dokusan room. The third barrier, when you have freed yourself from life and death, where will you go? Here's that question again, where? Where will you go? Our reasoning, our functioning mind kicks in. Do I go to the kitchen? Where will I go? Do I get the soup? Where do I go? Jen shared with me. Jen just did a course on Buddhist chaplaincy, specifically on helping the bereaved, sorry, the what do you call it, the dying, people that are dying, yes. And they had to do role play and various things like that. And Jen, she had that she did a role play with a monk. And so the role play was that one is dying and the other one has to somehow respond. What do you say? You know. And so Jen was the one that was dying. And she asked the question. Oh, where do I go? Where do I go when I die? And the monk said, don't worry. It's just like when you go to sleep. He said, you wake up and you go back to work. Like that, wasn't it? Oh, don't worry. It's just like when you go to sleep and then you wake up and you go back to work. Yeah, it's not so bad. Just a lovely answer, you know. You just go back to work, just like that. But seriously, where will you go? That question cannot be answered with our functioning mind, our discriminating mind, because there's where. Where gets in the way? Where gets in the way? Just like how and why. Where presumes that there is a future? Where presumes that there is a past? You know. So in order, again, to access that is unavoidable. Actually, the answer is unavoidable. You know, it's when I say it's unavoidable, it's unavoidable where you will go. It's totally unavoidable. But of course, it's a matter of really seeing that. And you cannot, the functioning mind kicks in again. And because that functioning mind is trapped in this paradigm of where and why and time and space and all this, it's very difficult to get out of that. But nevertheless, it needs to be shown very specifically in the Dokusan room. Where will you go? Of course, even in Buddhism, that whole notion of reincarnation and that whole notion of, you know, these beliefs that we have, you know, that'll all come into play. You know, but how do you really see that? You know, do you see that from that concept, as I said before, of the functioning mind, or can you really see through that? So that's what needs to be answered. Okay, Mumon's commentary. If you can say three turning words about these barriers, in other words, if you can make three presentations, really nail them. If you can nail those answers in the Dokusan room, and that is the wonderful work that we are doing. I mean, these are questions that we don't really, we might read them here and there in a book and look at what people have said about them, but we don't really get to the nitty-gritty of them. That's the wonderful work that we do in Zen. We are resolving them. Why are we resolving them? To be free. To be free of all of that, because in many ways these are barriers. That's why they're called barriers. Barriers of liberation. You know, when we are free from life and death, whoa! You know, that adds a huge burden from our shoulders, or that releases a huge burden from our shoulder and adds to that sense of liberation. So when you can say three turning words about these barriers, if you can really nail them in the Dokusan room, you will be master wherever you may be. Wherever you may be, in close contact with the real essence of all situations. I mean, being with someone that is dying and being in essence with what it really means, that is being the master. And nothing will shake you, cannot shake you anymore after that. Nothing can shake us, no matter what circumstances we find ourselves in. That in Zen, the word that we use quite often is, we will do the appropriate thing, meaning that appropriate is not a value thing. It doesn't mean that you're doing it according to this set of precepts. Appropriate to the situation, You know, when you really penetrated it, you know, you will be at peace no matter what happens. You know, no matter how difficult the situation is. And what comes to mind when I read this is when I look at people that written in very, very difficult circumstances, certain diaries like Bonhoeffer did during the Nazi camp encampment in Germany during the Second World War. He wrote a diary, or Anne Frank. On, you see some of the people that have really, that core essence has never left them, that somehow was still alive, even in the most difficult circumstances, that was still alive. So that's just an example of that. If you have not yet reached this stage, gulping down your food will fill you up quickly. It's very shallow. It's very gulping up the food. It's like when you eat sweets, or when you eat it really quickly, it doesn't last. It just does not last. It's just a momentary satisfaction, you know. So it's like reading a book and you go, oh yeah, that's right, there it is. I just saw it, and then something happens, and straight away you're back into your own discursive thinking, or you know, the discursive thinking takes over, or the functioning mind takes over, and you lose it. You know, you lose it. You lose that awareness, that core. You lose it. You know, like that. That's, I think, the sentiment of it here. While chewing well will make it more difficult to become hungry again. So while chewing well, really penetrating, you know, really. And this doesn't, by the way, this doesn't necessarily mean that when our first glimpse of our true nature, that we are at that point. Not at all. You know, the journey is a continuous journey of clarification. So that first, you know, we call it kensho. Remember, kensho means kensho, you know, seeing and true nature. Seeing true nature. Seeing the way it is, or seeing reality, or seeing really true nature. That's what kensho means. It's we can make it a thing, like, oh, that's kensho. You know, but actually, it's just seeing your true nature. That's all it is, seeing your true nature, you know. So while chewing well will make it more difficult to become hungry again. So that chewing process is the koan work, chewing it really well. We keep on clarifying and clarifying and clarifying and clarifying once, twice, three times. It never finishes. That is why in Zen we say the Buddha is still sitting. Meaning it never finishes. Again, if you say it finishes, you're like, you're stuck somewhere there. What do you mean finishes? Where's the finishing line here? Where is there a finishing line? The Buddha is still sitting. Did the Buddha die? Where's the Buddha? You know, there is no finishing line. Yeah. We keep on doing it. We keep on going on the way. You know, that's the sentiment here. Okay, let's look at the verse. In one consciousness, we see the whole of eternity. So in one consciousness, actually, it says it all, actually. This says it all. In one consciousness, like in the now, we see the whole of eternity. And of course, we practice that, but our functioning mind, again, doesn't see that. Mu-ing is nothing other than the whole of eternity. But if there's a me that is mu-ing, and if there is lunchtime in about another hour and a half, our discriminating mind doesn't catch on to that all of that is eternity. It doesn't see it because it is trapped in this, again, this time and space continuum. It's trapped in that way of thinking and looking at it. In one consciousness, we see the whole of eternity. That's all. You could also say it's unavoidable. If you really see unavoidable, you know, you see the whole of eternity. Eternity is nothing other than right now. Forget the past and the future. Right now. So everything happens at once. It's not like causality. Causality is again a function of the is again a concept of the functioning mind. So we don't throw that away, of course. As far as the functioning mind is concerned, there's causality. It rains and the grass is green. That's as obvious as anything. It's basic, you know. That is the functioning mind. But there is another part that we need to tap into that we can see, that see through that as well. So that's what's meant by that. Eternity is nothing other than right now. If you see through this one consciousness, now it says, if you see through this one consciousness at this moment, if you see through this one consciousness at this moment, right now, if you see through it right now, you see through the one who is seeing right now. So the koan that comes to mind here is the oak tree in the garden. When Joshua, you know, was asked, what is Buddha? The oak tree in the garden. This verse, this one sentence, encapsulates the entire dependent origination that the Buddha taught. That entire dependent origination is encapsulated in that one sentence here. You know, if you can see it. If you see through this one consciousness at this moment, all of causality, everything comes back right here. The entire universe, right now, without past and future, is right here. Of course, the discriminating mind can now logically look at that and say, yes, it needed the Big Bang for this to happen, or it needed Buddha to have been alive. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. If I wouldn't be here, this wouldn't be here, because I wouldn't have held it up. It needed wood, it needed fire, it needed the entire universe, the entire existence conspired for this to be here right now. But again, this is viewing it through our discriminating way of looking at things, which includes time and space. But to see that it is right now, bang, just like the Big Bang, you know, it's all here. That is really what he's referring to. If you see through this one consciousness at this moment, you see through the one who is seeing right now.